material together is looking at material concerning the collapse of the role of men in many, many areas. Suicide rates, when you look in colleges, the participation level, and even in high school, the grade levels are dropping. This is driven by divorce. This is driven by a breakdown in the home, the father-son relationships. And I realize one thing, while you may say, well, Larry, we're doing okay, and obviously I think there are many good things about this congregation, I do believe the trends in the culture do influence us. And I do believe that going back to God's way of how to build a home and how to be a dad and how to raise children is something we want to look at. And so we're going to be covering this from a Bible study perspective, but I'm pretty stunned by what's happening right now in our country, where men, they've been demeaned in Hollywood. I mean, we'll talk about some of this later. Men are appeared as idiots. And there are a lot of things happening in terms of, you know, even in the military, the suicide rate is multiplying. There are a lot of things happening right now in our country that I think that is a hindrance to God's role for men. So again, I'm not trying to do a social, change thing for the country, but I am wanting us to be equipped. This is a Bible study. And regardless of whether or not my view of the culture or some of the observations of some of the material I quote is accurate, I do know what the Bible says is accurate, and that's what we want to cover. I mean, do I have to tell you the insanity we're in? True insanity that we're now, it's being approved by our so-called educated medical associations and educational associations that you get to choose your gender. And that we actually have doctors that will literally prescribe medication to affect young boys and young girls because they've made a choice of their gender when they're still in elementary school or younger. There are things like that that's going on in our culture that, as some have described it, there's a war on men. There's actually a book written by that. And there's another book written that I've recently gotten called The Boy Crisis, and dealing with the struggle that young men are having as they come into the society with the so-called dogmas that are being pushed by those that once should have been respected. And so we're talking about people looking at God's design and mocking at it. We're talking about a new morality that's being put forth, and it's being enforced. I'm hearing more and more of people losing their jobs because they will not, let's say, speak to someone who has chosen a different gender. Or they would just simply speak. I know of a doctor at the UVA, very well-known doctor, and he spoke against some of these therapies, says it's harmful. He literally went and spoke at a place talking about the reason why, and he was fired. We are seeing a lot of crazy things, and there's nothing new in this. As you talk about societies, even God's people, had the occasion where they just let God go. The country whose constitution was the Bible, they went to a time where in pride they did not want to be held by God's standards. And whenever you cut loose from God, there's no stopping place. How far it goes. Again, in my life, I never dreamed that we would be hearing the stuff we're seeing put forth as rationale today in our culture. But you go back in Jeremiah's day, it says, Jeremiah 2:11, has a nation changed its gods, which are not gods? But my people have changed their glory for what does not profit. Be astonished, O heavens, at this, and be horribly afraid. Be very desolate, saith the Lord. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewn themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. One of the things I would say about the current culture and the dogmas being pushed today, what's the fruit of it? What's the true fruit of it? And you'll see that the true fruit of it is, we suggested, that there are destroyed families, their suicide rates are skyrocketing, crime is skyrocketing. You're seeing a lot of things. Again, I'm not trying to change the culture except to say, the worse it goes, the more they pour gasoline. They're putting gasoline on the fire. desire to try to put it out. And it's very true in Israel's day that God had a way to provide for people, to provide for homes, to provide for our real purpose. Cisterns that gave water. Cisterns was a way of bringing water to a place. And the people says, no, that's no good. That's traditional. And they built cisterns that were broken, and they were joyous at it, and they got no water. What I'm going to talk to you about when we talk about God's way, we've got to stay with that and not be intimidated by the experts that step up and tell you this is the more modern way. We've done the studies. This is how it ought to be. They can have failure all around them, and they never take responsibility for it. And again, as we talk about trends like this in country and so on, you'll talk about a generation. Generation comes from another generation. The kind of generation that we see depends upon the home. You'll hear over and over and over in this study, we're going to talk about the home. We're going to talk about the home in raising children. We're going to talk about the home in the husband-wife relationship. We're going to talk about the home in the role of men as a provider and a leader. Proverbs 30:11 talks about the fruit of a failed generation that raised a generation that, well, is described as this. Proverbs 30:11, there is a generation that curses its father and does not bless its mother. There is a generation that is pure in its own eyes, yet is not washed from its filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are like swords and whose fangs are like knives, who devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. Again, this is not going to be a gloom and doom study, okay? We look at things that are very disturbing. The one thing that I know with all my heart, God can provide for you and your home bulwarks that cannot be taken, that cannot be compromised. You and I can be successful. You and I can build godly, wonderful children that love the Lord and are strong and to resist the attempts of this culture. But it goes back to the home. As we talk about bulwarks, that's a term that maybe we don't use often, but you study military history, you have a fort, you have a defense, it's a bulwark, it's something that is a defense that the enemy cannot penetrate. When God gives bulwarks, I'm telling you something, enemy can't penetrate it, Satan can't penetrate it, his devious plans with all the power behind him and the world's governments cannot penetrate it. In Isaiah 26 and verse 1, we read about this prophecy of a provision that God will give to his people who return to him. He says, in that day, this song will be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. God will appoint salvation for walls and bulwarks. Open the gates that the righteous nation, which keeps the truth, may enter in. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. So this is a very optimistic study today. What I'm telling you, God's way that is given works. It's worked in every generation. There's nothing new in this study. I mean, actually, if you break down the essence of this lesson, it's the material that brethren have taught for generations because we're looking at Scripture. But I want to particularly emphasize, again, in this study, the need of our current generation, what we're dealing with in our current culture, and understand the need. Now, how do we build godly men? I've used this illustration many times. But I still remember when my son Stephen, our first child, we brought him home from the hospital. I still so vividly remember this in my mind, looking at Yvette, and Yvette's holding Stephen, and I'm looking at her. What do we do next? You know, it's like, okay, what comes next? And you know, that's a good feeling sometimes to have, brethren, parents, grandparents, those who have loved ones. We ought to be perplexed and humbled and say, you know, I need help. If you'll do that, and you know where to turn, there's great power in what you can make your home. In 2 Samuel 7, I love this passage where God is basically reminding David, I built you. I took you, notice, from being a shepherd. By the way, when I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, we had started a church there back in 1990, and we had quite a diverse group. We had one man that was a Navajo Indian, Key Yazzie. he was a shepherd. And I mean, he was left out there in the field by himself, you know, taking it. He was told me about his life and what it was like being a shepherd. Being a shepherd is a pretty isolated life. Now, again, if you understand God and your purposes, you don't mourn being a shepherd. But being a shepherd is probably a pretty low area in terms of life goes as far as your career path. Notice what God said to David. 2 Samuel 7, 8. Now, therefore, thus saith to you, to my servant David, thus saith the Lord of hosts. By the way, when you talk about the Lord of hosts, this is God of power. This is God who's got power and can do things. And he's basically saying, my power has been shown in your life. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took you from the sheepfold, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people, over Israel. And I have been with you wherever you have gone, and have cut off all of your enemies from before you, and have made you a great name, like the name of the great men who are on the earth. What I want to say again, as we take on this daunting task, God's way will work. And you know what I want? And I know every one of you would want this of your children or children to come. I want my children to go to heaven. I just want to deliver them to God, and I want them to be faithful. That's what I want. And you know, God can provide for that. If I'll just stay humble and I'll stay focused, you know, sometimes I'm afraid we get overconfident. And that's a danger maybe that we might face. Or we might think, well, we bring our children to church and we attend every service, and our children are associated with parents who also are Christians. And all that's wonderful. But I'm saying we need to stay humble and stay focused. God will teach us how to build . Let's take a moment. I know I'm preaching to you, but I'm kind of fired up about this material. I don't know if you can tell, but what is it going to take to build a man? If we were to look at this, let's say parents, what do we want to accomplish in building a man? Some thoughts? If you're going to build a godly man, what's got to happen? You have to be something. You fear God. And if you're God-fearing, then hopefully you can teach that to your children. But that's very interesting. Do you want your children to be something you're not? That's humbling. That's great. Good point. Building a godly man, what are some of the goals? What are some of the things we think about in doing that great task?
We've got to be that person. We've got to be that example.
Yes, be that example. What else? What are some of the dangers your children may face? Could other associates affect them? Yeah. Could there something come out of the blue, out of your control, affect them? What do you do about the unknown things that could happen that you can't control? How do you handle that?
Equip them for those times.
You equip them? Yes. Excellent. You equip them. You watchful. And this is something we'll be talking about, being watchful ahead of time.
Pray about it.
Pray. That's really what would go. But both are, you make them watchful and pray. Are we hearing this? Pray. And by the way, when your children marry and Eva have children, your grandparents, you still pray for them, don't you? And you pray for your grandchildren. The battle doesn't stop. You want to stay engaged with your children at every phase of their life as long as you and your children live. And the more I live, the more I realize of how limited I am, and I want God's help. Yes. This, I know for Yvette and I, with our children being out of the home, and you got to have this before you leave the home, as she said, your children have a continuing relationship with you, willing to talk with you, willing to visit, and that is crucial. And I would say to this, that's a great blessing for a daughter to be able to talk to a mother and son talk to a dad. I think about my dad. I'm not going to be able to get to the end of the lesson today, obviously. This is going to be a two-week outline. But at the end of this outline, I talked about my dad when I was growing up. He was the greatest man on earth. And you know who I wanted to be like? I want to be like my dad. And even when I got out of the home, being able to tell my dad what I was doing and for him to wisely guide me but praise me and encourage me. The daughter's relationship with the father, the daughter's relationship with the mother, all of these things are crucial. And so, and there's these are some things we'll be talking about in developing, a lot more things. They must be able to defend themselves and basically search the scripture and know what it believes. And to me, this is one of the biggest challenges we face. And I say in my own children, how can we get them to make faith their own? How can we get them where they really start studying on their own for the first time? You know, I was just recently finished up a wonderful quarter with our high school students. And one of the things I was telling them, I said, you know, the light bulb's got to come on for you. You've been raised by great parents, and you're doing great. Your reasoning is great, but you've got to get to the point where you start reading the scripture on your own, and you start learning how to think on your own. You may think, that, oh, yeah, they've heard all these sermons. They've heard all these classes. No, there has to come a light bulb that comes on where finally they start looking for themselves, and sometimes that takes a while. Sometimes it takes, what do they get out of college, you know, and looking at our own children, you know, I do believe they're, and that's an ongoing process of getting them to think and see on their own. That's a crucial one. And like I say, where that some of our children, that happens at different levels and at different times. Some it may happen early. Some it takes longer. It's one of those things almost that I pray to God about. That it's really, you know, but that's a major, major thing. We'll be talking in this study about the church and the home, and some other things in dealing with the role of men. Okay, how about this one? This is stunning, I know. Matter of fact, I would be rebuked in a lot of educational circles for saying this. Men are different than women. I'm really glad of that, aren't you? Of course, men are different than women. You know the nursery rhyme? What are little boys made of? Snips and snails and puppy dog tails. That's what little boys are made of. Sugar and spice and all things nice. That's what little girls are made of. You know, as we talk about men and women, again, I just marvel. I have to make this point in this culture. God made men and women different. They're different in their brains. They're different in their physiology. They're different in how they think. They're different in how they look, and aren't we glad about that? Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So I want to tell you, we have one thing in common. We have God's image in us. We're spiritual beings. But now, let's talk about this, if I could. I want to talk about, again, these are observations. If you agree or disagree with it, I won't be upset with you, but I want to talk about characteristics of men. And I'm talking about characteristics that are really innate characteristics. I'm talking about that the general tendencies that men have. There are people today, really, they're trying to say men and women are alike, and we can't view them as different. And could I tell you as a parent, that will be a tragedy. Your children are different. You have to learn your children. Your children have particular tendencies they have that are not evil, but they have to be molded. A wise parent understands that. One of the worst things you can do, and what our culture is doing in numerous ways, I can't put my finger on all of those things. I have some ideas we may talk about, but they're saying, in essence, men in their very essence are evil. And they say, no, well, we're not saying that. Well, you know, recently was one of these shaving commercials talking about the toxic masculinity. Maybe they had a good purpose in that. But I'll tell you, the message men are getting today, you're bad for being who you are. Again, when I say who you are, I'm talking about the tendencies that can be molded. I'm not saying I'm a man, therefore, hey, man, you know, this is the way it is. I can't change myself. No, I am saying there are some essence, some things that God gives us that are not evil. Before I get into the observation, let me start off, and then you can add to this list. What are men like? If we should make a list, what what are the general tendencies of boys, of men? And one writer, I'm quoting from an article from Focus on the Family, they talk about men tend to be outward. And here are some things. Explorative. Every boy and every man is on a quest. He discovers his identity out there in the world where he senses his larger purpose and destiny lie. Another observation about men and boys, they're determined to deliver the goods. A man places great stock in knowing that he has what it takes to complete the quest and accomplish the task at hand. How about this one? He needs to know what's next. And like a woman, he is inclined to cuddle, to savor meaningful experiences, or to linger in the moment. Again, there's exceptions to all of this, but we're talking about general tendencies here. Generally speaking, he is anxious to move on to the next thing. He's opportunistic. To put it another way, the male is a doer. In the final analysis, his feelings about what he's doing or his reasons for doing it are less important to him than the urge and the opportunity to get it done. Another one, takes chances. To seize and make the most of his opportunities, a boy or a man must be willing to take chances. Accordingly, a propensity to run a certain degree of risk is fundamental to the male character. How about this one? He's an initiator. All this presumes a certain willingness and ability to take the bull by the horns and to make things happen. It also suggests that leadership, while not necessarily exclusive male prerogative, is nevertheless more deeply rooted in the nature of men and boys. Active and aggressive. There's an obvious connection between initiation and active aggression. In light of this, it's interesting to note that the male brain is 2.5 times larger and more vital in the center devoted to aggression and action than the female brain. And, of course, we know this is true. Competitive and dominant. Men want the best and will expend incredible energy towards getting it. Here's one person's observations. You want to add to that? You know, one thing I can identify with, again, there can be exceptions in men. You've got personality types and things like that. And so some of these things may be stronger in some men than others, but as a general tendency, I do know men are aggressive. I mean, would I be correct in saying that? Little boys like to compete. Big boys like to compete. Sometimes big men are still little boys in some ways. And I'll have to admit to you, I certainly enjoy a task, a challenge, and going up and climbing the mountain and succeeding. Yes. Man, it is an aggressor, a hunter, a provider, and anyway, there's some great points here that man's always been that way. Yes, Timothy. I like that. I like that. And again, I want to emphasize here, we're not leaving women out. I mean, there's some great, great, wonderful things that Timothy brings that out. I have a purpose in this class. We're focusing on men, and we observe women, too. By the way, we probably need for equality. I need to have another quarter on raising godly women, and that would be okay. We might could do that. But again, the difference, how about parents with your toddlers? What do you see about boys that's different from girls? What are some things you just automatically see? What do boys like to do with boys? They like to fight. They like to wrestle. I believe it may have been Yvette that told me this. Maybe someone else recently. He says, you know, boys, and oh no, this is my daughter Emily, who's a school teacher now. And she says, you know, boys, they love to physically touch one another and grab one another and wrestle with one another. And so somebody says that's the boy's way of hugging. You know, I thought that was interesting. Even as an adult, I'll have to tell you, Yvette and I talk about this, because sometimes I tell Yvette, I'm not sure you fully understand men, you know. Because there are things, like, I went to visit Bob Simpson in the hospital the other day, and he had talked about the pain he had, and there was a brother there who was with him. And I turned to the brother and said, did you video this? Did you enjoy hearing his pain? And Bob laughed, and he laughed, and Yvette was like, oh, you don't say that. But it's guys talking to guys, you know. We understood it, but there are times, and my mistake sometimes is show my affection to Yvette like I would a guy, and in the sense of, you know, saying something, and that's not good. That's not wise. with guys, you know, somebody cuts at you and pokes at you, I consider that, hey, that person likes me. And Yvette would hear, oh, no, so these type of things. But you see, this type of thing, though, when you look at, again, I'm not for harassing a female, but some of the rules that's being put in society today and that's being put in school with some zero tolerance things, I think is saying to men, you are inherently evil. There's a lack of understanding. But it's fascinating. You know, somebody draws a picture of a gun and they're expelled from school. Do you understand? I remember Yvette was thinking when we first had Stephen and then Nathan that maybe we wouldn't have the weapons of violence for them to play with. And I look. You don't have to buy them anything. They'll make the swords and the spears and the guns and so on. You don't have to do that. This just dealing with the nature of men. Men learn how to fight, how to be aggressive. And again, that handled properly. Improper handling, truly treating somebody with disrespect, not understanding others. Those are things males got to deal with. But don't take away and tell me their aggressive nature is evil. It's not. Those are some of the things that I see in our culture right now that are a serious thing. So many other observations about boys and men. Okay. And, you know, the thing we're talking about here is we're talking about the raw nature of men. And what God wants to do and what we do as parents, we want to mold it. That's really our goal. We want to take those strong, aggressive tendencies and put them under God's control. And that energy and put it under the direction of being a builder. We want to be a builder to teach our sons to be builders, you see. And there's the essence of what the family should be. Again, Psalms 37, verse 3, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourselves also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. That's what I want my sons to do, to have that trust that brings their spirit under the control of the Lord. Psalms 34, 7. The angel of the Lord encamps around all of those who fear him and delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints. There is no want to those who fear him. The young lions lack and suffer hunger. But those who seek the Lord shall not lack any good thing. You see, I don't want a man that becomes arrogant and then trusts in his own wisdom and ability and he casts others down. No, that is a poor direction, truly a toxic direction that the male nature that is not evil could take. But when somebody trusts the Lord, that spirit is under control. And they recognize, you know, in this case, a lion, with all of his power, can suffer hunger and die. But that lion, so to speak, that strong spirit, put under the control of God, will never lack. I won't not just have boys and raise men. I want to raise godly men. Comments or questions? I know we're coming to about the stopping point for this first lesson. The problem we face ultimately with us and with our children is, can we teach our children to keep their hearts open to God? Can we teach our boys to trust God and to be teachable? Can we teach that tendency of men to accomplish and achieve, not to be lifted up in pride, but to recognize God. Here, Jeremiah is rebuking that generation. And it says, "For thus saith the Lord to the men of Judah and Jerusalem, break up your fallow ground. Do not sow among thorns. Circumcise yourselves to the Lord and take away the foreskins of your hearts. You men of Judah, inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my fury come forth like fire and burn so that no one can quench it because of the evil of your doings." Let's ask this question. How can we teach young men to have a tender heart? And we'll let this be our discussion to lead us toward the end of the class. What can we do to teach our young men to have a tender heart? There's an illustration. It's funny. Our oldest son, Stephen, there was a time he went, you know, and by the way, us boys, sometimes we'll go through phases. We get aggressively into something, and we're into it in a big, big way. My son, Stephen, got into the Titanic. And if you go through his old pictures that he drew, there were times where he drew hundreds of Titanic pictures. And he did some pretty good ones. We got a few of them framed. And you know, in my opinion, I think I know where that started. I remember we watched a movie. Yvette watched the movie. Yvette's mother watched the movie, and I watched the movie about a Titanic movie. And there was a father and his son in the movie. I don't know if you saw this one. And the father put the son on the boat, on the lifeboat, and then there was a lady that needed a place on the lifeboat, and unknown to the father, the son got off the lifeboat and the lady came back on the lifeboat. And then the son found the father, and there's the father like, "Oh no, my son's going to die with me." And I remember in the movie, it's a very emotional movie, and I'm a guy that, you know, again, one of the guy characteristics, okay, we've got this, but I don't like to show my emotion in certain areas. I kind of try to hide that, keep that down. But Stephen saw his mother crying and his grandmother crying and his dad emotional. And I think that that emotion of that situation of people that he loved being emotional, him identifying himself with the one in the movie, identified himself with the Titanic. I could be wrong about that. I don't know if he remembered it, but it was interesting. It was after seeing that movie, he became intentionally interested in it. And so you know what we did as a family? And Nathan, I'm sure, still remembers this, but we went up to Memphis when they had the Titanic exhibition. The opening of the Titanic exhibition, we went there. You know why we went there? My boys were interested in it, particularly Stephen. And it was the opening day we were there. And we found out that we were on the news and shown in some places around the country where I'm pointing out and Stephen and Nathan are looking at something at the Titanic exposition. We don't have that video anymore. But what we tend to do, again, as parents, we find out what our children are interested in. We get involved with it. But I think in this case, my son identified with hearts being touched, hearts being moved. That's just the way it works. And I think that's really maybe the point we're making today. Ultimately, as we build godly men, we need godly men to be builders. Now, by the way, not every home has a godly man. I think it's a great mistake to marry one who is not trying to go to heaven. And sometimes people are forsaken by their father. It's divorce. That's one of the big, big problems, by the way, in some of these books. It's divorce. Lack of time of sons with their fathers is probably the key element of why we're seeing the cultural problems today. But I want to say this, if you're the mother being the builder, or if you're the mother without a godly father, or if you've got both a godly father and a godly mother, you can succeed. You can succeed in this. God knows how to build, and He'll teach us how to do so. Other comments before we close? Looking forward to the study. You've got the outline for next week. We'll talk about building the spirit of a boy. We'll begin with that next week. We have extra outlines if you didn't get one. Thank you for your participation this morning.